if you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, then a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood, storming out to play through the broken dike. And as elephants parade, holding each elephant's tail, but if one wanders, the circus won't find the park. If one wanders, the circus won't find the park. I call it cruel and maybe the root of all cruelty to know what occurs, but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. The darkness around us is deep. That's a ritual to read to each other, a poem by William Stafford, the last stanza of which was incorporated into our call to worship, so you might have recognized those words. It is important that awake people be awake, right? The darkness around us is deep. I'm going to talk a little bit about this whole poem at length, I think, but the whole theme that I'm sort of waking up to this Advent season is being awake. Right? The scripture from Mark 13 that Christine read is a call to wakefulness. Be awake. Jesus says, "As what I say to you, I say to all. Be awake." And the same scripture is full of all sorts of admonitions. Beware, be alert. The footnote says in some versions it's be alert and prayer, and be at prayer all the time. Be awake. It's a theme for Advent, to wake up. And as I thought about it, you know, there's different ways of being awake, right? There's staying awake. This Mark passage is about staying awake, right? You got to be on alert and be on watch in case the owner of the house comes home, right? You don't know when he's going to come. There's this unknown, unexpected surprise element for all of us in Advent. We're expecting God to show up sometime, but we don't know when or where or even how. That's our sort of invitation to watch and pray and be awake. You don't know how God's going to show up for you this year, ever, all the time, anytime. So I think it's a beautiful sort of Advent theme for us to be awake. There's also the process of waking up, right? That's different than staying awake. There's getting up. I have a 20-something. Thankfully, she doesn't live in my house, but she has issues with waking up. And she's been diagnosed with narcolepsy. You know something about that, don't you? Yeah. So there is a thing. It's physiological. It's not just because she's 20-something, and it's not because she's lazy. She really has trouble waking up. So I'm thinking about that as a sort of a metaphor also for Advent, for our world, for the church, for the whole culture, right? Are we asleep at the wheel? Sometimes I think we must be. I feel sorry for the person who wakes up today and has been asleep for 5 years, say. They're going to say, what? You what? Who's in charge here? Wow. Wake up. I'm told Alan Cohen is the guy that writes this. He says in Genesis 1 or 2, in the story where God puts Adam to sleep to take his rib to create a mate for Adam, it says, God made us sleep to come over Adam. And it never says anywhere that Adam woke up. Think about that. The whole Bible, it's like the Wizard of Oz, right? The whole thing, you get to the end of it, and you're like, oh my God, that whole thing was a dream. So the reason he tells us that is that it's our job to wake up. That's why we're here. That's why we come to church. That's why we worship. That's why we open the scriptures. That's why we, you know, for me, I explore through art and poetry the way God is speaking to us in the world. It's all our process of waking up. Are you awake yet? So some words about the poem, and first of all, why I use poetry, because I'm gonna draw on some poetry throughout the whole season of Advent. The Bible is probably, I don't know, 40 to 60% poetry. If you open the Bible just randomly to Psalms and poetry or prophets, there's just a lot of it. Some of it's sort of historical, some of it's storytelling, some of it's gospel, some of it is letters, but a lot of the Bible is poetry. And I just think for a season we ought to sort of embrace that, that that God speaks to us through poetry. Because sometimes poets say things that we need to hear, and they say it in a way that we can actually hear it instead of going, oh, I don't want to hear about that. Like, that's what I do with the news, right? When the news comes on, I usually push mute because I do not want to hear it. And I preferably fast forward through it, or I change the channel, or I, honestly, I don't even turn it on sometimes. that's what direct sort of information sometimes speaking to us, that's how we react to it. But if a song comes on, and I'll listen to it for a while, and then I realize what the songwriter, the poet, is actually saying, I'm like, wait a minute, is he talking about me? And the way I make my decisions and the way I live my life. So poets sometimes say things very subtly and almost foggily. And then you walk around the rest of the day like, I don't know what, you know, Pastor Paul read that poem in worship today. I don't know what that meant, a ritual to read to each other. If you don't know the kind of person I am and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world. Think about that. Do you want to be in the world that's patterned by someone else's sort of determination? A pattern that others made may prevail in the world. And then I love this little twist, because it sounds like an element from our Christmas story. Following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. I think the poet got that wrong. I think he meant following the wrong star, we may miss our God. But that's what the poet does. He sort of flips things around sometimes. It sounds familiar, but it's flipped. It's backwards. Following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. In other words, we may wake up in someone else's world instead of the world that God calls us to. This idea that there's a pattern, you know, I want to live in the pattern of Jesus, frankly. I don't want a pattern that other people make for my life. I want to be a pattern that's patterned. I want my life to be patterned after things like kindness and compassion and the love of God that sees no boundaries and borders but loves everybody regardless. That's the pattern I want to sort of plug into. I don't want some pattern that others have made and just go about it sort of sleepwalking through my life in some other pattern. Another way to think about that is that the way we live in the world is to be intentional. That kind of comes through in that Mark passage too. It's like, do everything with purpose, right? If somebody left you in charge of the house while they're gone away and you don't know when they're going to come back, make sure you're fulfilling your purpose. Live your day with intention. And as he says in the passage, be awake and alert, and maybe even prayerful. Mary Oliver, another poet, she says, she has three instructions. Instructions for a life. Pay attention, be astonished, and Tom, you know the third one? Tell about it. Pay attention. Be astonished. And tell about it. I'll take the poet's sort of pattern for my life. That's another way that I would live. I want to pay attention. I want to be astonished. And Mary Oliver, she has a way of being astonished by everything from a grasshopper in the grass to the way the ducks fly, the way the trees move in the wind. You know, be astonished by simple things. Pay attention. There's a theme throughout this poem, a ritual to read to each other, that doesn't make sense when you just, you probably wondered when you read those words in the call to worship, it's important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. What is a breaking line? It makes a little more sense when you hear him talk about elephants. As elephants parade, holding each elephant's tail. That's the line he's talking about. It's a parade. It's a circus parade, right? Have you ever seen? There are no more circuses anymore, are there? At least Barnum and Bailey, that one's gone away. But they would march, right? And they would hold the tail with the trunk, right? So there's this line. And then it says, but if one wanders, the circus won't find the park. If just one elephant breaks away and wanders off, you know, it's like, that's the breaking line, right? That's the breaking line. When one wanders, the whole thing is shot. We're lost. It comes up again. He says, though we could fool each other, we should consider lest the parade, again, the parade of our common life might be lost in the dark. So he's kind of thinking about all of us, you know, it's kind of like we're all in it together. That's the feeling I get from this poem. A ritual to read to each other. I don't even know what that means. What's the name of the poem? A ritual to read to each other. Let's stay connected, I think he's saying. We're in this together. I think church is one of the only places in our culture that I know of where we read to each other. Have you ever thought about that? Where else do you go where somebody opens a book and reads to you? Do you do that? Grandchildren, you do it at home, maybe with your grandkids. Good. At the library, story time. At preschool, maybe she goes to preschool and somebody opens a book and reads to her. Yeah, but maybe a book group, maybe a Bible study. That's at church, so that counts. Do you read to each other at book group? Yeah, you'll open maybe a passage. I really like this part. But think about that simple gesture. And I don't know, maybe it's going to disappear because like I do, I can pull out my phone and I can ask Siri, you know, what's this thing? We did it 3 times today in Sunday school. It's kind of ridiculous. But that's what we do here. We open a book and we read to each other. Because we're in this together. So that helps us stay connected, not only to one another, but it helps us stay connected to a story that's bigger than us. So it helps us be together in a way that keeps us awake and watchful and prayerful. The other thing I was going to say about that Mark passage, that because we were just in Matthew a couple of weeks ago, Matthew 25, there's a series of parables. One of them is about a slave owner who's going on a trip and he gives the talents away. And that was just a very interesting sort of rendering. It seems to be the same guy. What is it with these people that leave and they leave all of their possessions and their house and their homestead and their estate in the care of their slaves? What it says, you know, when the master's away and he leaves the house in the care of the slaves. I think it's a way of elevating us. We're the slaves. We're the servants. We're not the large and in charge. We're not the politicians. We're not the priests and the pastors. We're the slaves. And we've been left home alone. Good Christmas theme. We've been left home alone, and it's up to us to keep this thing going. And the Mark passage is an invitation for us to be reminded about how we are to do that. You're not just going through the motions, but you're doing it with purpose, and you're doing it awake. Because it's important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line will discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no or maybe, I think about those three, right? That's yes, no, and maybe. That's like covering all your bases. And it's ironic because the poet's saying our signals must be clear. That doesn't sound very clear. It's either yes, no, or maybe. But in each instance, it's either going to be yes or no or maybe. There's a clarity sometimes in maybe. It's the clear signal that we're called to give sometimes. Our signals must be clear, yes or no or maybe. For the darkness around us is deep. So in this season, I'm reminded of another poet. His name was Isaiah. He said, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. The people who lived in the land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. That's the poet's job. Right, to say it in a way that we can hear it, find hope in it, maybe live into it, step towards it, step out of the darkness, out of the sleepfulness, and step into the light. For the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Thanks be to God.